Our next case is 13-1730, Philip Dodd et al. Versus John Krosky et al. For the appellant, Mr. Hervey.
Yes. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and Madam Chief Justice, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. There is apparently a conflict in this statute that the court can resolve here today, and by accepting the position of the appellants, the court helps effectuate the legislative intent of the Ohio Dormant Mineral Rights Act. It makes it clear who the holder of the mineral interests is. To accept the appellee's position would leave mineral rights all over this state undevelopable and leave titles in a state of confusion. No, we're dealing with oil and gas interests in this case. No oil and gas company is going to risk trespassing on someone's land without a clear issue of title. They're not going to develop it, and they're not going to pay for the development rights. It will stay away from these properties and go only the ones where there is clear title.
Is that a problem? I mean, it seems to me there was some number that was just released this week or last week about the number of oil and gas wells in the state of Ohio, and it was substantial, let's put it that way.
Especially in this area of the woods. It is a problem. You're going to have, if you take the appellee's position, how many thousands of lawsuits is Harrison County, population 14,000, going to see over these mineral rights? We have an affidavit filed by one of the appellees concerning either a grandparent or a great-grandparent, naming over 30 people who may have some fractional interest that was never explored for 70 years. 50 years ago, this state passed the Marketable Title Act to help make title clear. And it helps us every day, whether you're doing mineral rights or whether you're selling your house. 5301.55 specifically states that the intent of these statutes, including the one that we're here at issue today, is to effectuate clarity of title. Taking the appellee's position completely confuses the issue of clarity of title. The affidavit isn't something as simple as saying, my dad owned the real estate, my dad owned the mineral rights, my dad passed away and I'm the heir, due to probate court case 123456. The affidavit goes on for dozens and dozens of paragraphs, and if my calculations are correct, the appellees claim their interest based on the deaths of 16 ancestors. And there's only 2 probate cases listed. And as practitioners, we all know that you have to pass the interest through probate court to get it recorded.
Counsel, the difficulty that I'm having with your argument is the statute itself. I mean, I think you've raised some policy questions, but I think policy questions are for the legislature. So sure. If we look at the statute, if you look at 5301.56H1, mm-hmm. just to give one example, doesn't that section expressly allow both to happen at the same time? You can have an abandonment notice and have that proceed, but you could also have a preservation claim. So if you can tell me in the statute what makes your position correct under the language of the statute.
Justice French, I understand that position, but I would look at 5301.56, B as in boy, okay, which states any mineral interest, on and on and on, shall be deemed abandoned and vested in the owner of the surface, in this case the appellants, if the requirements of Division E are followed, which there's no dispute they followed that. Well, there is dispute, but it's not before this court. Publishing the notice, okay, and none of the following apply. Section 3, within 20 years immediately preceding the date on which notice is served or published, one of the following has occurred. Subject of a title transaction, on and on and on, a claim has been filed in accordance with Division C. That would seem to be in conflict with the subsection E that you were referring to, Justice French. And considering that we do have legislative intent here, that these statutes are for the purpose of simplifying and facilitating title transactions, I would argue that only B makes sense, not H. To let some family members wait 70 years without developing the mineral rights, without having them go through probate court, and simply file a claim and nothing more, after notice has been filed, completely subverts the meaning, the intent of the statute.
Then what do you do with H?
I think you ignore the either or. I think you go with B, because that's what the legislative intent is.
Even though, isn't H more express? Because it expressly allows both of those proceedings?
Well, H refers back to, and I'm sorry for the confusion here, H refers back, I believe, E, okay, and C. C refers back to B. And the Court of Appeals addressed that issue of which direction we go in, and I think that's what you're referring to, Your Honor.
Doesn't H relate to the response to a notice? Isn't that what we're talking about?
Yes, and Justice Lanziger, a reasonable response would be to say, look at this title transaction, or my dad died 6 years ago, and this probate case was opened, and we just haven't finished the probate process yet. None of that has happened here. It's just a claim being made by one individual. This court could avoid the issue and find that the claim wasn't properly made.
What's the
case
purpose
of
the notice?
The purpose of the notice, I think, is to give fair notice to anyone who claims the mineral rights.
This person
could
claimed
claim
it.
The mineral rights.
This person claimed it.
Well,
there was a notice. These are gone. You're going to lose everything. Oh, wait a minute. I'm making a claim. And you just said the purpose of the notice is to let somebody file a claim.
Justice O'Donnell, I think it's more of a due process issue to say, before we take somebody's mineral rights.
Are you taking issue with the form that the claim was made?
I'm taking issue with that as well, Your Honor, but because the claim is incorrect, it has to follow certain recording statutes. It has to state who the claimed owners are, who the surface owners are, and certain other factors. If you look at this, I believe, five-page recorded.
How long after you sent the notice did you receive a response of this claim?
If I can, Your Honor, I believe the notice was published in the newspaper November 27, 2010. 2 days later, Appellee Krosky filed a transfer which had no chain of titles, just saying from him to a trust held by him and his wife as the trustees. A month later, within the 60 days, he then filed the affidavit, which they're calling a claim. And that was within the 60-day window, which is why we filed a action in the Common Pleas Court to get a clear decision on title. There was no counterclaim by the appellees. And going back to your original question, sir, the affidavit is wrong. If you look through it at the very end, it talks about all the different ancestors who could have an interest. Now, let's forget for a second that only two people had estates. I don't know if Mr. Krosky was written out of his parents' will. I don't know if his parents were in a nursing home and there was a Medicaid lien on his father's property or his mother's property. We don't know because probate court hasn't dealt with it.
What would you have expected if Mr. Krosky had complied with the statute? What is it you claim he should have done instead of what he did to notify you of his asserted interest in the rights?
Do something in the 20 years prior to the notice. File a claim.
But not within the 60 days after the notice?
No, I think the 60 days gives them a window to point it out. In other words, don't sit on your rights because we want clarity of a title. Don't sit on your rights for 3 years and say, oh, yeah, we had a title transaction. We really still own the title. And, hey, Chesapeake, you're drilling now. You're trespassing.
Was his transfer a title transaction in your view?
No. And the Court of Appeals dealt with that issue favorably, and this court has not chosen to review that, so we haven't briefed the issue. But it's the restatement of this reservation was not considered a title transaction. And if I may, Your Honor, the point I was making is from all the names in the affidavit that was filed, the claim, one thing was left out. One of these ancestors did not reserve the mineral interests, and that's part of our client's property. Part of Track 4, was owned by three siblings. One of those siblings did not keep the mineral interest when she sold out to a coal company back in the old days. That stayed with the coal company. The coal company eventually sold it, and it ended up in my client's hands. They've listed Consolidated Coal as an owner. Consolidated hasn't made an appearance. They have no interest. My client is a holder of at least the one-third interest in the mineral rights in Track 4 and is not listed. This court can avoid having to make a decision on this by simply saying this isn't a valid claim. It hasn't followed the proper procedure in the statute.
So that's the claim that you're making here, that whatever Klosky did in response to your notice is not in compliance with the statute because he failed to list all of those who might have a legitimate interest, including your client.
Yes, sir. And additionally, I looked for this. There's a specific definition of holder for this specific statute, different from others. Since this is a relatively new statute, we don't have any case law showing us what a holder is. Is a holder a descendant of somebody who's been dead for 50 years, who never probated this, never had a separate title?
But counsel, when your clients acquired this property in 2009, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. They took it, and the transfer, the deed transferred the surface rights to Dodd, your client,
yes,
but purported to reserve the mineral rights pursuant to this 1947 Porter deed, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so they took it knowing they don't have mineral rights here. And then things heat up with the, you know, oil and gas industry, and that's when they decided, well, we're going to maybe see if we can get our mineral rights, and we're going to see, you know, we'll file this notice that we're going to seek to have the mineral rights declared abandoned so then they can revert back to the surface owner, correct?
Well, Madam Chief Justice, actually, I don't know what my clients thought they were getting in 2009. We know what the deed said, but as any of us who've done title work know, any good title agent is going to put every exception that was ever listed and not extinguished into a deed, even if it's more than 40 years old and not required under the market.
So you're saying the reservation of mineral rights was not mentioned in the deed?
No, it was mentioned. It doesn't mean it was valid. It means it was repeated because
okay,
it was in the last deed.
Okay, but I'm saying that your client had notice. I'm not saying that that was, you know, definitive. Let's say that.
Agreed, Your Honor.
Okay. So they decide, you know, once it was obvious that it would benefit them in order to take advantage of the statute to try and have the mineral rights then revert to the surface owner, as you said, to quiet the issue.
Yes.
They then file the notice or in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I guess my confusion is, like some of the other justices here, is the relationship between H and B.
Yes, sir.
H just allows the notice to be filed so that the discussion can take place on whether the mineral rights, were there any indicia of ownership of those mineral rights in the last 20 years, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then it also allows for some sort of curative action by the mineral rights owner. Do you disagree that the appellees own the mineral rights?
Yes, Your Honor, I disagree.
Okay, so isn't that the crux of the first hurdle here? Is to determine who owns the mineral rights?
Exactly, Your Honor. And Madam Chief Justice, that's why I think the clear legislative intent here was not to allow this late filing, post-notice filing. There
but
is
it
still
provides
no
for post-notice filing. That is, if there was no dispute that the, what's her name, Krosky's?
Yes.
No dispute that they own the mineral rights, then what they did was perfectly legitimate. Would you agree with that?
No, I would argue that under B, they would have had to file something before the notice. Do something in 20 years. Just file a notice, just like you have to do with other matters. Just like adverse possession, you can't just sit and do nothing for 21 years and let
But counsel, doesn't
property.
That defeat the intention of the statute? The statute, it seems to me, to be new owners like you have to come on and they think there's a question of title to the mineral rights. And the statute says, well, okay, why don't you publish something in the newspaper and see if anybody claims ownership? Isn't that the real purpose, as the chief is suggesting to you, that starts the ball rolling? Okay, Mr. Krosky comes up and he says, well, grandpa or great grandpa had something in 47 and I'm the heir. Isn't that enough?
I disagree, Your Honor, because they haven't probated anything for 14 of these people.
Is that required? Required by the statute? I thought Ohio was a notice pleading state to have people come to the courthouse and let's litigate.
But the purpose of this statute, Your Honor, of the Marketable Title Act for the last 50 years, has make it easier to see clear title. We no longer have to go back to the land grant from the federal government in 1803 to see how you own chain of title in your house.
Well, I suppose that's how you answer the chief's question then. If you had put the newspaper notice on and no one had responded, you have clear title at that point, do you not?
The statute specifically states what my client should do. Publish the notice, record publishing with 30 to 60 days later, and now the statute also has a procedure for how to effectuate this, with the recorder's office if there's no problems. It does not say what to do with this claim. Let's say the appellees win. What's it mean? They can't develop the mineral rights. It's against the idea of the marketable title. There's no clear title because nobody's probated things for 70 years.
Well, there wouldn't be anything to stop them from probating, going back and going through all the hoops that would be necessary in probate court. It doesn't have to be the heir that probates. It could be a variety of interested parties that would precipitate a probate action, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So that's not the toughest thing in the world to do, to go back and go back to 1947 and go forward and just figure it out. Who gets probated? And it's a lot of work, but it's not rocket science.
Well, it's a lot of work.
No disrespect to probate lawyers.
Or rocket science. Madam Chief Justice, I would argue that it would be very difficult. We don't know, because 70 years hence, we don't know what happened to a will. We don't know 50 years ago if somebody had liens.
There are mechanisms in probate law that deal with those unknowns, with those uncertainties. There's all kinds of mechanisms, from publication, such as what is in this revised Code 5301, et cetera. It's to flush out the interests, and that's what notice is all about. And that is done in the arena of probate, mm-hmm. and apparently it's done in the arena of mineral rights. So. The law, there's an answer for each one of these steps, and it's found in the law, the statutes.
And I know I've gone over my time, but I would simply answer the question, ma'am, that they've not filed a claim for all these decades and not cleared it up. And the purpose of this statute is to make clear title. Leave it where it is today. Nobody's going to deal with these appellees because there's no clarity of title. 1/40th of their claimed mineral interest can be seen clearly through probate proceedings. 97.5% is not. And meanwhile, if they take forever and a day to go through 14 probate proceedings, these minerals will be undeveloped and the purpose of the statute will be thwarted.
Thank you.
But you said earlier that there was no definition of holder and you wanted us to clarify, but apparently, 5301-56 says a holder means a record holder or any person who derives rights from or has a common source with a record holder. So isn't there a definition of holder already?
When I say there's no definition, Your Honor, there's been no explanation of who those other people are. Who derives their rights from the record holder? We don't know.
It would be the descendants, the people, the unknowns that you're talking about right now.
I don't know. That hasn't been defined anywhere, Your Honors. Thank you so much for your
time. Thank you. Counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Jeff Pollack, and I have the privilege of representing Karen Cheney and her three siblings. I'm here today with Counsel Rupert Beetham and Marquette Evans, who collectively, together with me, represent over 3/4 of the mineral holders at issue in this case. This court is about to embark on an historic development of the law in the state of Ohio, adjudicating the rights of surface owners and mineral holders with the advent of the Utica oil and gas boom. This is the first case before the court interpreting the statute at issue, which is an amendment to the Marketable Title Act and referred to commonly as the Dormant Mineral Act, section 5301.56. Let me start first by saying the arguments made by counsel for the surface owner today are not at issue before this court in terms of the validity of the affidavit. The affidavit is a very detailed document in the record that states with explicit clarity the identity of the mineral holders, all of whom are descendants of Samuel Porter and his wife.
Could you stop and refer to the affidavit in terms of the statute? What portion of the statute was the affidavit filed for?
H1A.
Thank you.
And
counsel, if I may, I have another question along those lines. Your opposing counsel seems to suggest that that affidavit standing alone is not enough because it has not been through probate court on behalf of 20 heirs. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, this was never an issue at the trial court. No one ever challenged the validity of that affidavit.
And this comes to us on summary judgment, correct?
Yes. It's never challenged. That's not the issue before the court. And the affidavit is very clear in terms of its compliance with the statute. And all the heirs are listed.
Isn't the question is that affidavit sufficient to block the surface owner's retrieval of the mineral rights?
Yes. That's
the only issue we're here to talk about.
The issue is very clear.
Is that what the statute provides for?
Yes, that's correct. But by way of background, the Ohio Dormant Mineral Act, surface owners will argue that it should be used as a mechanism to clear title and declare mineral interests abandoned and vested with the surface owner. But the real purpose is to first establish a procedure for that, and secondly, to clarify title as between the rights of the mineral holders and the surface owners.
Well, counsel, the argument we just heard reminds me a lot of our former Secretary of Defense dealing with the known knowns, the known unknowns, and the unknown unknowns. What's the answer to the practical problem that he's raising as to, he's suggesting there are a lot of unknown unknowns here, and so you're saying the Dormant Mineral Act is designed to clear things up for both sides.
Correct.
Do you see in this case, as you apply the facts, that there will be, at the end of the day, if the outcome goes your way, clarity as to who exactly owns the mineral rights on this property?
The issue...
Or will there still be, as he suggests, lingering unknown interests for which no one can account, and is there a procedure to wrap that up?
I believe there is, Your Honor. The Dormant Mineral Act is a statute that is allocating and adjudicating the rights of these minerals as between the mineral holders and the surface owner, collectively the mineral holders. We contend, and the statute is very clear, which I'll get to, that the affidavit filed by our clients preserves their mineral interest collectively. Now, if there are issues that they raise about probate court or who is a legitimate heir or not, or the particular percentage interest, that can all be determined after the fact by the local probate court. The issue before this court is, do these people have a mineral interest that they own?
What this is going to show is who doesn't.
Correct.
Have a mineral interest, not who does, because as you said, that'll happen later. This is as opposed to the surface owner. Will the mineral rights be rejoined with the surface rights?
That
ownership?
Is correct.
That's all we're here for.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Well, as you point out, this is our first look at a freight train that's coming down the tracks at us. So you represent the known knowns, or in this case, but let's say there's 40% of the mineral interests belong to folks that you can't track down. What happens to that? Do those mineral interests or rights become concentrated in those who stepped up, or do those eventually end up in the surface owner then?
Well, that's an interesting question, but not the facts of this case. I would say that in this case, the affidavit was filed by Mr. Crosgie. The statute allows for one holder to file the affidavit on behalf of other heirs. So every heir named in that affidavit is asserting a claim.
Okay, I understand that, but he's suggesting there are folks that are unaccounted for. And if they're unaccounted for, does this pie get sliced up? In other words, the process that the surface owner engages in could foreclose those folks while your folks go forward with their interests.
I suppose that is possible because but the holder is representing the heirs. But so I don't know the answer specifically to your question, but it would be decided after in a subsequent
right.
proceeding.
Counsel, isn't that the problem that we're here on summary judgment? Because there's issues that still need to be resolved, and there's one that's rolling around in the back of my head that I can't get rid of this morning. You understand this is not the only mineral rights case we're going to hear today?
Yes.
When the new holders of the property bought the property in 2009 and acknowledged the 1947 mineral lease?
Yes.
Was that a title transaction?
I believe it was, Your Honor. The trial court so held. The Seventh District disagreed and said it was not a title transaction. That issue is not before you today in our case. It will become an issue, I think, in subsequent cases, but it's not an issue in this case.
Why? Why is it not an issue in this case?
Because
that was a summary judgment review by this court.
Well, there was a cross appeal by the appellees on that issue because we lost at the Court of Appeals, and this court did not take that appeal, that cross appeal.
But you will acknowledge there's two ways to revive mineral rights in Ohio today.
Absolutely.
One is the affidavit we're talking about, but the other is a title transaction within 20 years.
Absolutely.
And a title transaction happened in this property within 20 years.
Correct.
And this is the landmark case we're going to rule on.
Well, that's not, you have that issue in a different format coming up later today, but the issue of title transaction will be a significant issue in the interpretation of this statute.
Counsel,
I'm going to walk through the statute.
I was just going to ask about the statute. Your friends on the other side say that B really decides this case. So can you walk us through B, and particularly as it relates to H?
Yes. The statute contemplates and states a very specific procedure. It's akin to a due process procedure of fairness, where the surface owner serves notice on the mineral holder of its intent to declare the mineral interest abandoned. That's under subsection E. And then the mineral holder, upon receiving that notice, has an option. And the statute says, and I'm looking now under H1, the mineral holder shall do one of the following. I'm quoting this from the statute. One of the following. H1A, file a claim to preserve the mineral interest in compliance with Section C, which was done in this case, Section C of the requirements for the affidavit. Or file an affidavit that identifies a savings event in the preceding 20 years. That's Section B. By a little background there, Section B of the statute provides that the mineral interest is preserved if certain events have occurred in the preceding 20 years, such as a title transaction, such as production or use.
Well, it would have to be a title transaction that mentions the mineral rights.
Pardon me? Yes.
It would have to be a title transaction, which is what the 2009 deed did.
Yes.
And you lost below on that issue?
We did. we prevailed in the trial court, lost to the Court of Appeals. So the
you
mineral
filed an affidavit that's Exhibit C.
Pardon me?
Pursuant to that, you filed the affidavit, which is attached here as Exhibit C. Is that right?
Yes. So
what part of that affidavit, if I understand Mr. Hurry, he claims that affidavit is defective because it doesn't comply with B3. And B3 says that within 20 years you are to identify immediately preceding the date on which it served one or more of the following, where the mineral interest has been the subject of a transaction. Where in the affidavit? This is a listing of property transferred from one to the next. That's all it is. Doesn't say where the interest is. And I think that's his argument, that the affidavit doesn't do what the statute's looking for.
Well, I think what he's ignoring one of the specific options in the statute. Let me walk back it again. The mineral holder can exercise one of two options, either H1A,
the claim,
file a claim pursuant to the compliance with Section C, which I'll get to, that's the affidavit,
right,
or an affidavit that identifies a prior savings event in the preceding 20 years. It's one or the other.
And does your affidavit identify a savings event?
No, we're not arguing that
you're not under B, you're under A.
A, we're under A, yes, we're under A. Because we filed a claim to preserve the mineral interest in compliance with subsection C. And subsection C details the requirements of what is needed in the affidavit, which are clearly fulfilled in this case and never challenged below, identifying the property, the mineral holders, the owners, et cetera. It's an 8-page affidavit in great detail filed by counsel.
And that affidavit recites all of the recording of the interest.
Absolutely.
Is that correct? Everything is recorded.
Everything that was recorded, correct.
So is there anything out there that is still lingering? That's my question.
Not to our knowledge. There's not. And it was never these issues about the affidavit were never raised below. So the issue before the court is a narrow issue of whether a claim to preserve a mineral interest filed in response to a notice of abandonment from the surface owner must reference any prior qualifying savings event in the preceding 20 years in order to preserve the mineral interest. And the answer to that is no. The statute specifically allows a different option.
And that's you're saying because of subsection A, you don't have to comply with subsection B.
Correct.
Because it's one of the following.
One of the following, A or H1A or H1B.
I understand.
Apparently, in your situation, it could have been both.
Well, it could have been, yes, and we claim that it was, but at least before the court today, since the appellate court determined that this was not a title transaction, we think it was. Nonetheless, we still comply under H1A.
Not to be overly harsh with the appellate court, but they would have found reasonable minds could only reach that conclusion, correct?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
They granted summary judgment. They said reasonable minds could only reach one conclusion there.
Well, I don't think it was a factual issue. I think it was a legal issue about whether this reservation in the deed, in the 2009 deed, constituted a mineral interest which was the subject of a title transaction. I think it is, and that's what we argued below. We didn't prevail on that issue. But that issue will be, and this court did not accept that cross appeal.
Mm-hmm.
That issue will be coming before the court in different forms, even today, later on. So there's no question that the affidavit was timely filed within the 60-day period. The affidavit is completely sufficient, never challenged below. We've completely satisfied this very specific statute. And in terms of the clarity, counsel suggests that that this will not create clarity. It will, because the Dormant Mineral Act is a statute that determines who has these mineral rights, the surface owners or the mineral holders. In our case, we complied with the statute. The mineral holders own the rights.
And it seems that the statute, in a sense, favors the mineral holder rights, the way you're explaining it, because the abandonment portion that opposing counsel has been referring to talks about these points that can't be, they can't have the transfer, for example, and they can't do the other, the development of the mineral rights, or they can't show abandonment. But you're saying that you only need to file the affidavit after the notice of abandonment. And if you file the affidavit correctly, the rights are yours.
Correct. And it's not necessarily favoring one side or the other. The statute is essentially setting up a mechanism whereby notice is given to the mineral holder. And if the mineral holder does not respond timely, then it does vest with the surface owner and it becomes abandoned. So it's a fair procedure, a basic standard of fairness. Give the person notice and an opportunity to assert their claim.
So if we clarify this statute and say, for example, if we would agree with your viewpoint, then what interest in the mineral rights have you preserved? There are clearly some who are not present in court.
Well, I believe that they are. I mean, extreme efforts were made by able counsel to identify all the heirs of Samuel Porter and his wife.
You think one heir can submit a document to protect all who haven't asserted a claim?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
As I understand that statute, you must assert a claim.
Yes.
How many of the mineral right holders asserted a claim?
I believe there's approximately 37.
All of them asserted a claim?
Yeah, they're all mentioned in the affidavit.
But how many filed the claim?
Only one, Crosby, but the statute provides for that. It says a holder may file a claim, and the trial court found that
on behalf of all?
Yes, that's permissible.
So for the development of these rights, rather than dealing with one surface owner, anyone would have to deal with all 37, correct?
In terms of a company that
wants... A company would have to deal with all 37 mineral right holders rather than one surface holder. Yeah. And that's where counsel has talked about the difficulty in developing the oil and gas
state. That may be, but it's important to recognize that these people have a property right in the minerals.
Counsel, I'm interested in how this all gets going out there in the real world. You know, we hear these stories about you have to take a number to even get in the recorder's office in some of our courthouses now. So when the owner of the surface rights files a notice under this statute, in this case, do folks just read the newspaper and start popping up, or are some of these lawyers that we're admitting from Texas and Oklahoma and everywhere else see that and go to the courthouse and try to figure out if there might be clients like yours out there, and then go looking for them and say, hey, you've got a valuable right here that's you didn't even know about. How's that all work? Is that what's happening when these get filed, or are most of them from folks who read the legals and say, hey, granny left me something I didn't know about?
You raise a very interesting issue, Your Honor, and it'll be probably another issue coming before the court. It's not an issue today, but namely the issue of notice. The statute requires service by certified mail, and that if that person cannot be located, then service by publication. And there's all kinds of issues about what standards are required to locate someone. In this case, the surface owner and many of these mineral holders all live in Harrison County, so they knew it would have been easy to find them. But nonetheless, the service was by publication. Fortunately, one of the mineral holders in this case saw the publication, so they got notice in that respect, although I don't think it was adequate. Once again, not an issue before the court. But certainly issues of notice will probably arise again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I cite cases also from, just to mention one briefly, from other states that have a similar statutory mechanism.
Counsel, you've used your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly, in response to a few of the issues presented here, and Justice Pfeiffer just mentioned research at the county courthouse, the trial court record will show that we did that before filing the notice. But since there had been no record of the mineral interest being transferred, and since there had been no probate record, because very few people in this family tree had been probated, there was no choice but to file notice by publication. To refer to Justice O'Neill's point about title transaction, although not before this court, as this court is aware, you're going to have a lot of issues with this statute to deal with. Title practitioners, the majority of them, vast majority, put every little thing in the deed because they don't want the seller to be brought back on a breach of deed. They don't want the title insurance company and them to be paying the bill. There's a minority who try and act like a court or a recorder's office and determine on their own whether this has been extinguished. Those are people who get sued and get title insurance claims. So we believe the Court of Appeals was right in saying a restatement of an old mineral reservation without a sale of it or a transfer to someone is not a title transaction.
Mr. Hervey, if I understood the argument presented by Mr. Pollack, he claims that under H1A, if a holder or a successor or assignee claim that the mineral interest under E has not been abandoned after notice, they may file one of the following. And then under subsection A, a claim to preserve the mineral interest, he claims they've done that. Mm-hmm. And he claims in support of it, the affidavit is detailed, 8 pages, as to each of the successive transfers. And he says he's now satisfied the statute. If I understood your earlier argument, you said the affidavit was defective and the claim wasn't properly filed. But apparently it seems to follow H1A. And I'm asking, what is your view on that argument that he presents to us?
Right. And Justice O'Donnell, we of course know that I'm looking at subsection B, but let's look at H for a second, like you say. H1A.
Well, no, I'm not saying it. Mr. Pollack urges that he's complied with it, and it is sufficient to preserve all of the mineral rights that you're claiming have been abandoned.
Sir,
and I'm asking you, what is your response to his argument?
My response is H1A requires, and by the way, this doesn't say, it says affidavit at the top, not claim. That recorded document says affidavit. Okay, but let's say it's a claim. The claim must comply.
If I'm reading H1A,
C.
Let me just read it to you so we're clear about what it does say. Mm-hmm. If a holder or successor or assignee claim that the mineral interest that is the subject of the notice has not been abandoned, and then I'm going to jump down, they may, subject to the mineral interest located, file one of the following. A claim to preserve the mineral interest in accordance with Division C of this section. That's what it says.
Yes.
He claims he did that. I'm asking you, what is your response to what he did?
And sir, 1A says follow C. C says what a claim should have. A claim should be in certain ways. One of them is to follow 5301.52, which is the general recording statute here under the Marketable Title Act. Okay? One of those procedures is you need to show the chain of title. You need to reference your prior deed reference so somebody else can see it.
And he said he filed an 8-page affidavit in compliance with that.
And I would argue that it was not in compliance, Your Honor. Specifically, at paragraph 23, we lose our way on a chain of a claim of title
Paragraph 23 of the affidavit?
Of the affidavit. And the affidavit does not list our clients, who are clearly the one-third mineral rights owner of Track 4, because one-third of the mineral interest on Track 4 was not reserved by one of his ancestors. Went to Consolidated, or actually it went to a different company, and after 50 years of strip mining and reclamation, this property was sold and eventually went to the appellants. It's with the surface owners. They weren't named. 5301.52 wasn't filed. That means subsection C wasn't followed, which means this is not a valid claim.
Counsel, can I ask one question? Let's assume that you would agree that the affidavit was correct. Just assume that. Are you saying that the abandonment portion of the statute would still have to be looked at, even if their affidavit was correct under H, that you would then go back to D and see if they had done all these things within the 20 years to preserve their interest? Are you looking at it that way, or are you seeing them as totally separate the way opposing counsel is?
I'm sorry, Justice Lanziger, I think I heard two different questions there. Let's assume, what I heard is, assume the claim was properly recorded and properly listed everything. What I'm saying is subsection B, as in boy, still controls, which says prior to the notice.
So you still look at that 20-year period, you're saying?
Not 20 plus 60 days, but right. 20, because that's what the legislative history throughout the years has shown. This was a model law. It was brought forward by the OSBA real estate section specifically because there was so much confusion in these mineral transactions, and this resolves it. And that's the legislative intent, to resolve these confusions. Taking the appellee's position doesn't resolve it. We're 4 years post-suit. I haven't heard the appellees filed one single thing in probate court to clear up those 14 estates. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Gentlemen, we'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess?